I sat motionless for a while, wondering how to get ready for whatever was to come, wishing it would just start. Next on the coach was Jessery. He saw what I had seen. In his face, I thought I read some of the same emotions, but less so. He'd already been picked to go to space. He was probably expecting something like this. As he walked past me, he socked me on the shoulder.
"Good to be with you," he said. "There's no one I would rather be vaporized with, my Frau."
"You're getting your wish," I said, recalling the talk we'd had at Appert.
"More of it than I wished for,"
he returned, and banked down into the seat across the aisle from me. A few minutes later, we were joined by Frau Jad, who sat alone behind the officers. He nodded to me, and I nodded back. But once he had made himself comfortable, the Veilers came up the aisle one by one to introduce themselves to him and to pay their respects. A young female Ida came in, followed by a very old male one. They stood around Saman for a few minutes, reciting numbers to one another. I fancied that we were going to have three Ida in our cell, but then the two visitors walked off the coach and we did not see them again. When Frau Arcibald arrived, he stood at the head of the aisle next to the driver and considered fleeing for a good half minute. Finally, he drew an enormous breath, as if trying to suck every last bit of air out of the coach, and marched stolidly up the aisle, taking a seat behind Jessery.
"I had damned well better get my own stained glass window for this."
"Maybe you'll get an order, or a consent," I proposed.
"Yes, maybe, if such things continue to exist by the time the Advent is finished."
"Come off it. We are the Hylaean theoric world of these people," I said. "How can they possibly destroy us?"
"By getting us to destroy ourselves."
"That's it," said Jessery.
"You, Arcibald, just appointed yourself the morale officer for Cell 317.
Jessery didn't understand some of the remarks that Arcibald and I had exchanged, and so we set about explaining what had happened at Messel. In the middle of this, Jules Verne Durand came aboard, hung all about with a motley kit of bags, bottles, and baskets. His presence in the cell must have been a last-minute improvisation. Ayla couldn't have planned on him. He looked slightly aghast for a minute, then, if I read his face right, cheered up.
"My namesake would be unspeakably proud," he announced,
and walked the full length of the aisle, introducing himself as Jules to each member of Cell 317 in turn.
"I shall be pleased to starve to death in such company."
"That alien must have some namesake," Jessery muttered, after Jules had passed us.
"My friend, I'll tell you all about him during the adventures that are to come," said Jules, who had overheard.
Lateran ears were pretty sharp, apparently.
10 down, 1 to go,
called the driver to someone who was evidently standing at the base of the steps.
"All right," said a familiar voice. "Let's go."
Leo bounded up onto the coach. The door hissed shut behind him, and we began to move immediately. Leo, like Jules before him, worked his way down the aisle, somehow maintaining his balance even as the coach banked and jounced over rough ground. Those unknown to him got handshakes, and hurrying clockwinders got spine-cracking hugs. Veilers got bows, though I noticed that even Fra Osa bowed more formally, more deeply to Leo than Leo to him. This was my first clue that Leo was our cell leader. We were at the aerodrome in 20 minutes. The escort of military police vehicles really helped speed up the trip. No hassles about tickets or security. We drove through a guarded gate right onto the taxiway and pulled up next to a fixed-wing military aircraft capable of carrying just about anything, but rigged for passengers tonight. The officers at the head of the coach were its flight crew. We filed out, crossed 10 paces of open pavement, and clambered up a rolling stair onto the craft. I wasn't happy. I wasn't sad. Most of all, I wasn't surprised. I saw Ayla's logic perfectly. Once she had accepted that she was making the terrible decision, the only way forward was really to make it, to take it all the way, to put all of her favorite people together. The risk was greater for her. The risk, that is, that we'd all be lost, and she'd spend the rest of her life knowing she'd been responsible for it. But the risk, for for each of us individually was less, because we could help one another through it. And if we died, we'd die in good company. "Is there a way to send a message to Sura Ayla?" I asked Saman, after we had all claimed seats and the engines had revved up enough to mask my voice. "I want to tell her that she was right."
"Consider it done," said Saman. "Is there anything else, as long as I have a channel open?"
I considered it. There was much I could, should have said. "Is it a private channel?" I asked.
"Don't be ridiculous,"
he pointed out. "No," I said. "Nothing further." Saman shrugged and turned to his Jija. The craft lunged forward. I fell into a seat, groped in the dark for the cold buckles, and strapped myself in.